Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, April 19th. I'm Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Humboldt adopts new restrictions on signs. 420, celebration and activism in the cannabis community. And the KMUD News Sports Report. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. Humboldt County has a new law regulating signage. KMUD's Daniel Mintz reports.
In a narrow vote, Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors approved the sign ordinance that regulates sign sizes and types and their brightness. Approved at the board's April 9th meeting, the new law prohibits new billboards and digital signs, but those in use now can remain in use. Reconstruction of billboards damaged or destroyed in storms is conditionally allowed in the ordinance, but the rules on that go above the county's authority. State law, the Outdoor Advertising Act, limits what local governments can do when it comes to preventing billboard rebuilds. The ordinance does regulate them by requiring a discretionary permit that lasts for 15 years to allow billboard owners to gain enough income to recoup their investment. Billboard rebuilds aren't allowed if they're in natural resource areas. Much of the board's discussion was on size and brightness of signs, with Supervisor Mike Wilson supporting limits on that.
And there was a mention around, you know, what are the industry standards? And I guess I'm really more interested in what are the community standards? And what is it in that makes our community better and nicer place to live? And I understand, and still have the commerce and the that we need to do what we got to do. And I can tell you that those giant LED billboards on the side of the road and down in Santa Rosa and other places, when they popped up, I can tell you, probably not very popular, and probably the decision makers at the time got a lot of phone calls about that. I can't even imagine that it put to a vote that those communities be like, "Oh, I vote yes on large digital billboards." That just seems, I just can't even imagine that. So we're trying not to go in that direction.
Public comment was sparse. Jeff Wills, owner of the All Points Billboard and Sign Company, objected to the ordinance's billboard provisions, saying they'll unfairly impact his business. But Supervisor Steve Madrone noted the ordinance's provisions on buyouts of billboards that get damaged, and he said sign restrictions are needed.
So I like that we've got much less billboards in these scenic vista areas like around the bay and such. I understand the concerns that have been expressed about investments and the risks that were being taken and stuff, but I believe that's covered in the sense that if we disallow something, we have to buy it. And that could include some remuneration for whatever the useful life is left in that sign. So I think that kind of covers that. And frankly, if you want to protect that investment, it's better under the draft ordinance that we have in front of us to go out there and deal with that maintenance issue and do the replacement of some of the rotting parts or whatever long before the sign blows down and falls to the ground. That's how you protect your investment, is making early repairs and protecting that. I do support the idea that we shouldn't be having these on all the natural resource lands.
There was debate on the necessity and the scale of the ordinance. Board Chair Rex Bone and Supervisor Michelle Bushnell are concerned about business impacts, with Bushnell describing the ordinance as nitpicky. A staff presentation included photos of signs in unincorporated areas that exceed the ordinance's new size limits. This exchange between Bone and Planning Director John Ford describes how the existing signs will be treated.
You showed pictures of signs that are non-conforming. Are we going to have sign policemen, or is that going to be completely complaint driven? Or is that going to be, what are we going to do about existing signs?
So existing signs, one of the things that the state law requires is that we do one of two things. We either identify that we're going to do an inventory of all signs and identify whether or not they're legal or illegal. Then those signs can have an enforcement process, or you can find that all signs are legal nonconforming. And basically at that point, all signs that exist, exist. And that is what we've written into the resolution. So I want to be really clear here too. Signs that are permitted, like anything else, when you change an ordinance, those signs do not lose their entitlement to exist as they're currently permitted.
When it came to voting, supervisors considered additions proposed by Wilson, including applying international dark sky standards to sign illumination. They were added to the ordinance, which was approved in a 3-2 vote, with Bone and Bushnell voting against. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Ray Hamill brings us the details of all the latest local sports news, including how one local high school baseball team is looking to end a long championship drought and is in line for a top seat at this year's North Coast Section playoff.
An HDNL team is ranked number one in its division in the North Coast Section as the race for this year's Big Five and Little Four championships begins to heat up in baseball and softball. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on that story in just a moment, and we'll also be looking at all of the other big local sports stories this week, including all the latest high school and college baseball and softball, some track and field news, and how one local school recently ended a long wait for a league championship. But first up, the Ferndale Wildcats will be hoping to end a long championship drought themselves in baseball as the HDNL teams get set for the final 2 weeks of the regular season. The Cats are tied atop the Little Four standings with St. Bernard's halfway through the conference schedule, and the two schools will face off in what will likely be a conference-deciding doubleheader at Ferndale in 2 weeks. St. Bernard's has dominated the Little Four for much of the past 2 decades, winning 15 of the past 16 conference championships, including a run of 10 straight between 2006 and 2015. South Fork is the only other school to have won a Little Four championship in baseball since 2005, having claimed the title in 2016. But the Wildcats, who have lost just once all season, could be about to change that as they head into the business end of the season. Their one loss this year came in the opening game of a doubleheader at St. Bernard's earlier this month, but they quickly responded to take game 2 to leave both schools deadlocked atop the Little Four standings. That victory over St. Bernard's ended a 43-game winning streak in conference for the Crusaders. And the Wildcats have been impressing people beyond the Redwood Curtain. The Ferndale boys are also the highest-ranked local team within their division in the North Coast Section and are the number one-ranked team in Division 6 and in line for a possible top seed for the section playoffs. Five other local teams are also ranked in the top four in their divisions. In baseball, the South Fork boys are ranked number 3 in Division 6 this week, just 2 spots behind the Wildcats, while the McKinleyville Panthers are ranked number 3 in Division 4. In softball, the Del Norte girls are ranked number 3 in Division 4, while both the South Fork and Fortuna girls teams are ranked number 4 in Divisions 6 and 4, respectively. That means all of those teams could be in line for home games when the playoff brackets are announced on the weekend of May the 12th. In high school baseball and softball this week, the McKinleyville boys continued their run toward a league title in the Big Five with a 6-2 win at Del Norte on Wednesday, with McKinleyville senior Evan Frazier getting his 4th win in 4 starts on the mound, barely getting the better of Del Norte ace Preston Daniels in a showdown between two of the best high school pitchers on the North Coast this spring. With the win, the Panthers improved to 6-1 in the Big Five, and they are now 2 wins clear of second place Eureka, Rica, which has a bye in conference play this week. The Panthers will try to keep their impressive run going when they host Del Norte in a doubleheader at McKinleyville High School on Saturday. Also this week, the Arcata boys got their first Big 5 win with a 9-4 victory over Fortuna on Wednesday as they improved to 1-3 in conference. Both of those teams will also play a doubleheader at Fortuna on Saturday. The Huskies are now 2-5 in the Big 5. In Big 5 softball this week, the Fortuna girls kept their championship hopes alive with a 6-3 win at Arcata on Wednesday, and they will be hoping to sweep a 3-game series against the Tigers when the two schools face off in a doubleheader at Fortuna on Saturday. It was also a busy week for the local college baseball and softball teams. The Cal Poly Humboldt softball team stretched its winning streak to 5 straight games with a 4-game series sweep at home against Chico State early this week. On Monday, the Jacks defeated the Wildcats 5-2 and 9-2, and they followed that with a 10-0 win in 5 innings in Game 1 on Tuesday, before wrapping up the series with a 7-3 win later on the same day. With the victories, the Humboldt women improved to 22-19 on the season and 12-12 in the California Collegiate Athletic Association. The Jacks are currently tied for fourth in the conference standings with 2 series remaining in the regular season. The College of the Redwoods softball team was also in action this week and dropped both games of a doubleheader at Mendocino College on Wednesday. The Corsairs fell 10-0 and 5-2 to end a 3-game winning streak, which had included a pair of wins at Lassen last Friday. The Corsairs are now 11-21 overall and 8-8 in the Golden Valley Conference. The CR women have 2 doubleheaders remaining on the schedule, including their home finales against Yuba on Saturday at the Bear River Sports Complex, with Game 1 set for noon. The Mendocino Eagles are now 15-19 overall and 8-6 in the GVC and 3rd in the conference standings. In local college baseball, meanwhile, the CR men dropped a pair of makeup games against Butte on Sunday and Monday, falling 8-2 and 11-5. The Corsairs, who have lost 6 straight games, are now 9-17 overall and 2-17 in the GVC. In college track and field, College of the Redwoods sophomore Alyssa McCovey made some school history recently when she became the first Corsairs athlete to compete at the NorCal State Heptathlon Championships in a quarter of a century. And a strong finish for the former Del Norte Warrior lifted her to an 11th place finish, which is the 3rd best finish in the event in school history. McCovey set PRs in 4 of her 7 events. In high school track and field, 6 HDNL athletes are currently ranked in the top 10 in the North Coast section in their top track and field events, including St. Bernard's junior Layla Florvillis, who has the best mark in the section in the girls' 100 meter hurdles with a time of 15.63 seconds. And finally this week, the Academy of the Redwoods won its first ever Coast League Championship in basketball last weekend, defeating Zoe Barnum 30-23 to claim the historic Breakthrough Championship. The Coast League features local high school students attending small alternative schools that are not a part of the larger Humboldt Del Norte League. 7 different schools from around the county competed this season. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
Turning to Mendocino. After brandishing a firearm in Fort Bragg, a Santa Rosa resident was arrested and subsequently released on Thursday. KMUD's Scylla Gergens reports.
On April 15th, at approximately 11:14 p.m., Fort Bragg police officers were dispatched to an escalating verbal disturbance in the 500 block of Kempe Way. Officers arrived and saw a male, later identified as Elijah Zapata, 21, of Santa Rosa, immediately run from the area. Officers pursued on foot and after a short chase caught Zapata. The other individuals involved stated Zapata had threatened them with a gun. Officers searched the area Zapata fled and located an unregistered, unloaded revolver. Here's Fort Bragg Police Chief Neil Cervenka with more.
Officers were dispatched to a verbal disturbance amongst a few males that was escalating. When they arrived, one of the males fled on foot. They gave chase. And after a short foot pursuit through some uneven terrain, they caught the suspect. When they continued their investigation. They learned from the other people that were in the verbal disturbance that this gentleman had allegedly brandished a firearm at them, and they retraced the pursuit route through the wooded, brush-filled area and located an unregistered, unloaded revolver on the ground. They booked that suspect on several charges and determined the other two people involved didn't commit any crimes. They were victims in this incident.
No one was injured in the altercation, which was verbal only. Cervantes stated that the revolver was unloaded and had not been discharged during the disturbance.
Correct. They found no ammunition. It was a revolver. So it's not like a semi-automatic where you can just throw a magazine away. It would take effort to unload it.
After investigation, officers determined the other individuals involved were victims. It was also confirmed that Zapata was currently out of custody on his own recognizance on an unrelated case with terms to obey all laws. Captain Thomas O'Neill said in a press release, quote, "I'm very proud of our officers. While most of our community slept, these officers chased and arrested an armed suspect. They also recovered an illegal firearm, getting it out of the hands of a criminal. They undoubtedly made our community safer." End quote. Zapata was arrested and booked in the Mendocino County Jail for the felony charge of criminal threats and a second of carrying a concealed firearm, along with misdemeanor charges of resisting arrest, disturbing the peace, violating court orders, and brandishing a firearm. Officers requested a bail enhancement of $50,000, which was authorized by a judge. According to Mendocino County Sheriff's booking logs, Zapata was released on Thursday, April 18th. Anyone with information on this incident is encouraged to contact Officer Frank of the Fort Bragg Police Department at 707-961-2800, extension 210. For KMUD News, I'm Stella Gerkins.
April 20th, commonly known as 420, is celebrated by cannabis enthusiasts and activists worldwide. The origins of this unofficial holiday are somewhat hazy, but it is often attributed to a group of students known as the Waldos from San Rafael in the 1970s. They reportedly met at 4:20 p.m. to smoke weed after school. Rumors suggest these students had connections with the Grateful Dead, a band that helped to popularize the 4:20 concept nationally. Today, 4:20 serves as the date that the cannabis counterculture is celebrated in both the United States and internationally. Events on this day typically focus on advocating for the legalization of cannabis and celebrating its use. California and the Emerald Triangle have been at the forefront of the cannabis trade and community long before legalization. To explore our regional history of activism, resistance through cannabis cultivation, and the challenges that remain, we spoke with Ellen Comp.
I'm the Deputy Director of California Normal. That's the state chapter of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, which has been around for 5 decades now.
Normal advocates for the rights of cannabis consumers and cultivators.
Like I like to say, I didn't work for legalization for 30 years just for a handful of venture capitalists out of Canada to take over the market.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws was founded in the 1970s, and a lot has changed over those 5 decades. However, some things remain the same. Comp shares a timeline of their work.
Well, what Normal started with was decriminalization, because at the time you could go to jail for a joint, and people did. And then it moved, survived the Just Say No 80s, kind of got reinvigorated with the hemp movement, which is when I got involved in the early 90s. And then we saw the advent of medical marijuana, which was brought about largely by the AIDS community that was advocating for their medicines, including cannabis. And cancer patients were coming up to me, and it was just starting to be known about the medical properties of it. And so California in 1996, and Cal Norma worked on this, passed that groundbreaking law, Prop 215, to legalize medical marijuana. And that really started the ball rolling for first medical legalization and now full adult legalization in, gosh, I've lost track of the number of states. But, you know, we're at a point where we're at 65% approval of cannabis legalization or more in the states, and still at a standstill in a lot of ways on federal policy. But at the state, we're making some progress.
In 2022, Cal Normal helped champion AB 2188, a bill that prohibits employers for drug testing for marijuana and decisions to hire, fire, or penalize workers. But despite this legislative success, some employers remain resistant to these changes.
Of course, we're still up against the federal roadblock of them declaring marijuana as no medical use. It's a Schedule I substance. It can hardly even be studied for medical use. And we're seeing, a loss in the number of truck drivers because they're still tested for medical marijuana, as is any marijuana. Anyone with a commercial driver's license is, because it's federally regulated. It's causing all kinds of problems, injustices, as well as the economic issues for employers that are unable to fill their ranks.
Although full federal legalization might be a distant goal, she points out that there is current momentum towards rescheduling cannabis.
It's now in the DEA's court. The Department of Health and Human Services has decided it should be in Schedule 3, which would be somewhat better, make it more available, and get rid of some of these federal obstacles, perhaps like the tax issues federally. Still pushing for some change at the federal level with a Congress that's really not moving on much of anything. Even a banking bill, you know, we're trying to get to allow banking for cannabis and a lot of things that should be pretty obvious.
All Californians are invited to attend the California Normal and Americans for Safe Access Citizens Lobby Day on Monday, May 6th in Sacramento. The event will bring supporters from across the state to meet with representatives and make their voices heard on pending legislation affecting the rights of cannabis consumers and cultivators in the state.
It's going to be on Monday, May 6th. It's a great opportunity to come and get engaged. We do a little training in the morning, tell people about the bills, give them some lobbying tips, make appointments for them with their legislators' offices or their staffs. One bill we're trying to get passed, and something we're trying to make happen in general, is more places where you can go and enjoy cannabis together with people, you know, like a cannabis lounge or an event or something like that. And there's been roadblocks to that in state law. I know there are some in Eureka and Ukiah and San Francisco and a few other places, but in a lot of places, there aren't places where people can go. And some of them want to also serve food or coffee or prepare food on site. That's not legal now under current law and regulation.
Normal is collaborating with Assemblymember Haney on AB 1775, a bill that would allow cannabis businesses to prepare and sell non-cannabis and non-alcoholic food and drinks in a cannabis cafe setting. The initiative aims to enhance both industry and consumer experiences by creating a more versatile and social environment. Cal Normal is sponsoring this bill and is actively working to address the concerns raised by Governor Newsom, who vetoed their original proposal last year. Additionally, they are focused on extending a bill that should improve access to medical cannabis, which has been challenging for patients following legalization.
Another key bill that we're working on is AB 2555 from Assemblywoman Quirk Silva, which would extend the tax break for cannabis compassion programs, because after Prop 64 came in then and legalized for recreational use in 2016, it had this whole licensing taxation scheme and these donation programs that were giving away pot to people who couldn't afford it, still had to pay tax on that pot that they gave it away. And so they couldn't afford to do that. So we had to get an exemption for that. That took 2 years to pass and get signed, but only with a 5-year sunset, as all tax measures seem to have. And so we have to re-up that this year. And that currently is stuck in the Assembly Revenue and Tax Committee. We had a hearing last week. We're going to have another one on the 29th. We very much hope it gets out of that committee. We're putting our best effort for it. Veterans are coming forward and other groups that are going to be affected by this law if it goes away. Oh, and next year we're going to have to fight the raising of the excise tax at the state level from 15% to as much as 19%. If receipts aren't high enough, that's the only way we were able to get rid of the cultivation tax, which is also being slapped onto cannabis.
Normal is also collaborating with North Coast Assembly member Jim Wood to enable direct sales, a move that is particularly vital for local boutique cultivators. The initiative aims to bridge the gap between small-scale cannabis producers and consumers by allowing farmers to sell their products directly.
AB 1111 from Assemblyman Wood, which would allow sort of a farmer's market, farmers to sell directly. We're behind that bill. We just spoke with Origins Council about that last week, and we're working on getting rid of stumbling blocks to that bill. Not so much in the legislature, perhaps elsewhere. You know, there's a whole regulatory scheme and everything else. And I've always liked to hear, because having lived in Humboldt and worked for Civil Liberties Monitoring Project, always would love to hear from the farmers there about what can be done either legislatively on a regulatory basis to help that community.
She noted that the economic impacts of the cannabis regulations and market shifts are not isolated to the Emerald Triangle. Even historically wealthier regions are experiencing negative economic effects.
They had to cancel Hippie Hill in San Francisco this year because they couldn't get the support from the industry, enough sponsorship for it. The times are hard right now for the cannabis industry, and we're just trying to find any way we can, like this cafe bill or whatever, to keep it alive. There was one tax reform bill this year from Senator Bradford that we're going to be lobbying on that would end this kind of double taxation that's happening with excise tax and local taxes. And we just got to keep chipping away at it and trying to make it better and workable for everybody. Humboldt, when I lived in Humboldt, a lot of people didn't want it illegal because they foresaw this and they were right. I always wanted our full rights to be able to stand up and say who we are and not have to tell your kids at school you can't tell them what mommy and daddy do for a living and that sort of thing. And we're somewhere in between those two moments now, where I hope we can keep pushing forward and move in the right progressive direction on a whole lot of things, including cannabis.
And on the occasion of 420, Ellen Comp emphasizes a dual approach. Celebrate and activate. She encourages the community to not only enjoy the day as a celebration of cannabis counterculture, but also to use it as an opportunity to engage in activism.
Well, take a minute to celebrate 420. I mean, it's a, you know, it's great that it's turned into like a national holiday. There's been so much media on it and everything else. And it's kind of moving from maybe the civil disobedience thing that we had done for years to, you know, people enjoying it in lounges. Like San Francisco has this Weed Week, 7 different lounges on 7 nights, and they're bringing the growers in and they're really working with a lot of the grassroots people on it. And, you know, we're going to have to still stay creative and, you know, work with our grassroots and build on our strengths in our community. And yes, getting involved with Normal helps, because there's another 40 bills this year. Some of them would ease up on some of these CEQA requirements that are holding back locals. You know, unfortunately, those people are so busy just trying to keep their head above water that, you know, it's hard, but it needs to be done. And if you're not at the table, you're served on the table. So CalNormal is a good way to gather that strength, you know, find some energy to help with it in one way or another. And again, go to our site. I have all the bills listed there. You can click and see the, you know, what's going on. You know, it's not like we legalized it and it fixed it, like much to the contrary. For a lot of the people who sort of left, last refuge was, you know, this illegal cannabis market that we're keeping these seed strains alive and keeping this wonderful culture alive. And the last thing I want to see is for that to die. So as you're hanging on, we've got to find ways to try to fix the laws and regulations that give people some more breathing room on it all. Just happy to see 420 continue to have momentum, and I hope that it can spur some more action too.
You can learn more about CalNormal on their website. That's canorml.org. In Southern Humboldt, the Mateel Community Center will be holding their annual 420 Smokeout with reggae artist Army and Soul Medic, a 21 and over cannabis farmer showcase, and a community barbecue. This event is all ages and open to the public. Just visit mateel.org for more details. In Arcata, Cal Poly Humboldt and Centro del Pueblo will have a community celebration with cumbia and free tacos. That celebration takes place at the Wiat Plaza on the Cal Poly campus. That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Ray Hamill, Stella Gerkins, and Eileen Alfandari. KMA News is online. You can find us on KMA.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send us an email to news@kma.org. Reporting remotely for KMUD, I'm Lauren Schmidt.